Our next presenter is Kara Bickin-Kinsey, and her paper is entitled Effective Previous Perinatal Loss on Health Behaviors in Subsequent Pregnancy. Ms. Bickin-Kinsey is affiliated with the School of Nursing of the Penn State University Health and Human Development, East University Park, Pennsylvania.
Thank you. I'd like to discuss the results of our study. And first, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Keisha Baptiste-Roberts and Kristen Kiroff, who are both on my dissertation committee and mentors to me. And Dr. Kiroff is also the PI for the study that this is a part of. I have no financial relationships to disclose. Perinatal loss in the literature refers to miscarriage, stillbirth, and neonatal death, and it occurs in 12 to 20% of all pregnancies. Then 85% of these women who experience perinatal loss will become pregnant again within 18 months. So you can see by these statistics that it affects a population, a large population of women. This is just a select background from the literature, but women with a history of perinatal loss are at increased risk for depression and pregnancy-related anxiety when they become pregnant again. And they also, some women report a feeling of waiting to lose the baby during pregnancy, which I think is pretty heartbreaking. And they can often interpret the physical symptoms of pregnancy, most often normal symptoms, as problems with the health of the fetus. Currently, there's limited research, actually two studies that I found, on healthcare utilization in women with a history of perinatal loss. These two studies found that these women had more procedures or tests during pregnancy. They called a practitioner more often, and they had extra or unscheduled outpatient visits when compared to women without a history of perinatal loss. When I examined the literature, I could not find anything that looked at health behaviors during pregnancy in this subset of women. So since the literature is so sparse and also this affects a great number of women, the objective of our study was to determine whether women with a history of perinatal loss differed from women without a history of perinatal loss in two groups of outcomes. The first is modifiable health behaviors during pregnancy, and we looked at exercise, weight gain, multivitamin use, alcohol consumption, and smoking. The second outcome was healthcare utilization during pregnancy, and we looked at the gestation at which women initiated prenatal care, their third trimester emergency department visits, hospitalizations during pregnancy, and outpatient visits. Our study population was from the first baby study, which is the longitudinal prospective cohort study conducted in Pennsylvania. That study includes 3,006 women, but our sample was 2,854. The first baby study, just to give you some background, was designed to investigate the association between mode of first delivery and subsequent childbearing. Women aged 18 to 35 were enrolled in the study if they were expecting their very first live birth, and it was a singleton pregnancy. For this study, we used variables from the first telephone interview, which was conducted during the third trimester of pregnancy, and then also some variables from the second interview, which was conducted at 1 month postpartum. Our independent variable was a history of perinatal loss, And we dichotomize the variable using the group of women with no losses or one previous loss, that was one group, versus women who had two or more perinatal losses. And we chose to do it this way because there's some evidence out there that one loss can be similar to no losses, where two or more losses has a greater impact. Of course, we use chi-square test or student's t-test to evaluate the bivariate relationship. And then among those variables that were significant in the bivariate analysis, we did regression models. And we adjusted for age and whether or not the woman reported that she received fertility advice or treatment. And then also smoking status, we thought that was especially important for the healthcare utilization outcomes. This is just a sample of our demographic characteristics. And I want to point out that women in our study were mostly married. They were mostly non-Hispanic white and mostly did not live in poverty, although we do have some variation. And the highlighted section is just to show you that between the women with two or more perinatal losses and the other group of women, they were only different by age and whether or not they received fertility advice or treatment, which is absolutely what we would expect. In the bivariate analysis, we found that these two groups of women did not actually differ on many of the, especially the modifiable health behaviors. They were the same statistically for gestational weight gain, multivitamin use, alcohol consumption, and exercise. For healthcare utilization variables, they were the same number, they had the same frequency of overnight hospital stays, the same number of outpatient office visits, and the same number of prenatal procedures. These are the variables that were significant at the bivariate relationship, and so we found that smoking status remained highly significant after adjustment for age and fertility advice or treatment. And women with a history of two or more perinatal losses were four times as likely to be daily smokers during pregnancy. Then the other variables that I'll talk about from here on are also adjusted for smoking because that was so highly significant. Women with two or more perinatal losses had twice the odds of visiting the emergency department during the third trimester. And they also had almost twice the odds of being hospitalized at any time during pregnancy. In this slide, you can see the results of the linear regression, especially I want to point out the adjusted means on the right. So you can see by this that prenatal care, women with two or more perinatal losses receive their prenatal care about 1 week earlier. So the on average, it's not too surprising. And however, they were also hospitalized twice as many times, although the overall number is pretty low. And they had twice the number of ED visits in the third trimester. So in conclusion, I thought this was actually surprising that women with history of perinatal loss or two or more were more likely to be daily smokers, but I think that may be sort of a reverse cause and effect, so where the daily smokers have probably always been daily smokers, and that may be related to why they had more miscarriages. This is the part that I find most important, that they were more than twice as likely to use ED or hospital services during pregnancy. But they did not have an increase in outpatient visits, overnight stays, or procedures, which we can't actually test this in our sample, but it suggests that it's possible these hospital services are being used out of fear or anxiety and not necessarily due to actual increase in healthcare needs. And since it was the first study that was found in this population for modifiable health behaviors, I think it's a good thing that we didn't find any differences between the two groups. So a couple limitations just to point out is that we didn't have any other types of perinatal loss in our sample, just miscarriage. So that would have given us a little bit more variation. Our study participants also tended to be older, more likely to be non-Hispanic white, and more educated than the general population of women having their first baby in Pennsylvania. And as I said before, we were unable to explore in depth the reason for the ED or hospital visit. However, we did have a large prospective sample of women, and we feel like looking at them for their first baby sort of eliminates some of the confounding factors that come along with different sizes of families and different previous pregnancy experiences. Okay. We believe that future research should really examine the use of healthcare services more in depth so that we can determine why these women are using more healthcare resources and determine if it is determined that it's related to anxiety and fear, there's some things we can do. Using active listening and increased counseling and support during regular scheduled office visits could really reduce any unnecessary healthcare utilization and, of course, the costs that go along with that. I'd like to acknowledge our funding. The First Baby Study is funded by the National Institute for Child Health and Human Development, and then my doctoral studies have been funded by the NINR. And these are the references that I cited throughout the presentation.
Thank you very much. May we have some questions, please? Yes, ma'am.
It's not really a question, but the perinatal loss, we do perinatal support at healthcare conference once a year, and the nurses are saying how the family really doesn't associate death with the perinatal loss, and so they don't get that grief support, bereavement, recovery, as with any other loss perinatal. So that's probably why no research.
That's a really good point, and that's one of the reasons that I do this research is because I feel like the issue of perinatal loss is important, it has a great impact, but it's not recognized, and the more we can do research, the more we can find out about it and get it out there, and maybe more families will be supportive and understand the impact. So thank you.
Yeah.
I can't recall what happened. I think I did, and I can't recall what happened, but I do remember that when I dichotomized them differently, when I dichotomized them 0 versus 1 or more, then the two groups were not significant, and I think that's because the impact, the group with 2 or more was a small number, and their experience kind of got dissolved with the 1 group.
Right, I just wondered if
I think that's a really good point, and I'm going to have to go back and look at that.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just a question. It might be a dose response, but there might not be. Amy, I just wondered how similar the ones are.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Okay. So I had a question about how the timing of the miscarriage, when was that measured during pregnancy? So I just didn't know, is it we're talking second and third trimester,
I believe the definition of miscarriage, we did not define it for women as far as saying 20 weeks or 24 weeks gestation. But so what we did was we allowed them to say whether they had a miscarriage or not. So I think that's actually a little more sensitive to the emotional response they get. So if they didn't really know they had a miscarriage or they don't consider it that, then it wouldn't show up. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.